Oh, clear my butt. Nothing's ever clear with you.
Everybody, this is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 27. What comes up? Must come down.
We're doing bits. Hey, Sarah.
I'll clear your butt, J-Wags, but first... It's Again With This, episode 79, dropping January 14th. Let's watch Doug Savant in season 8, episode 14 of Castle. It's called GDS. We'll have a link. It is on Hulu, if you are a subscriber there too. And we'll be talking about it for our Patreon subscribers. Please join us. We talk about this and a lot of other fun stuff. That's at patreon.com/againwiththis.
Indeed. Shall we get into this episode?
Let us.
All right. Let's start with our D plot. Alan continues souring Matt's love life without even being there. We don't get any Matt at all until literally 39 1/2 of the episode. And that's not including commercials. This is just in the DVD rip. So it was even longer if you were watching it live. And in the scene, he is boring David at Shooters about how great his life is without Alan. Alan has been in New York for a week, hasn't even given Matt his number. And finally, David breaks in to ask if Matt hears himself at all. And Matt can't believe he's talked as much about Alan as David says. And if he has, it's just because he's so over him. But David would like to know, if Matt is so over Alan, why does he even need his phone number? And Matt's like, common courtesy. And David's like, clip two.
This was a mistake. Check, please.
Another keeper. Check, please. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
David, it's so true.
I mean, I kind of don't really know even how he went out with Matt after Matt basically accused him of outing Alan to the press. Like, it feels like that's the end of the friendship since he didn't do it.
Yeah. But. And since Matt thought he did, like, it just seems like they should not know each other anymore. But yeah. This shows utter desperation and trying and failing to find something productive for Matt to do is really on display right here.
Well, I believe they're about to not know each other anymore. But anyway.
Yeah.
Matt somehow can't believe that David is sick of his shit. Clip three.
I am trying to figure out my mistakes, my feelings, and just so I can have a successful relationship. And what do I get? A bunch of guys who can't deal with anything. I mean, they just want what they want, and to hell with everyone else. You know, I ought to try that for a while. To hell with everyone else except for me.
You really need to get a hold of yourself.
Yeah, and you need to get lost.
Ooh!
Also, much as with Joe's I'm already gone in a recent episode after Richard told her to leave, like, you need to get lost doesn't work as a kiss off line when David is like halfway to the door already.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, that's literally it for Matt in this entire episode.
Well, David, we hardly knew ye, but it's too bad. They really had pretty good chemistry until he decided the friend you fuck once and to like tries to angle in and tell you some shit play didn't work. Like, it's just a shame. Sigh.
Anyway, moving on to our C plot, also barely a plot. Jake does a business behind Jane's back. So Jane meets Jake at Shooters at his request. He is worried about her. She needs someone to handle the business end of her company, and she knows he hates Richard, but Jake did approach him behind her back to strike a deal for Richard to work with Jane again. And Jane is justly pissed, which Jake puts down to her being too proud to accept help. And she thought he would understand pride more than anyone, which is actually a good line because that's his whole thing.
True.
But then Jane shows up in Jake's office the next day to say she now thinks he's right about working with Richard again. But has Jake thought through what it might mean for her relationship with Jake if she spends so much time with Richard again? And Jake says he trusts her, which is hilarious because the last several episodes have been all about, like, both of them revealing the lies that they've told to each other. Him sleeping with Claire, her burning down the fashion show, blah, 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 blah. But sure, that's all fixed.
Someone also says Richard is a damn good businessman at some point in this plot. Like, he's good at identifying people to sleep with and then relax on their coattails.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, per this show's business, 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 business. Yes, I guess that qualifies.
Right. I mean, damn good businessman who was packing up his office forever when Jake went there, which put a pin in that because in the next episode, the office is fine and there are people working there again. But anyway. Yeah. Jane is ready to call Richard right now, but Jake would rather bone her first, and that ensues. And that's it for the C-plot, too.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. A lot of chess pieces moving.
We're so close here to the finale right now. So.
And yet, it doesn't feel that way at all, but moving on.
It doesn't. You're right. Moving on to the B-plot. Joe gets in some babysitting hours while Sydney gets a tattoo. When we rejoin Sydney's storyline, we're seeing Bobby being attached with a belt to her bed frame by one goon while another holds a gun on them. And the second goon is from, like, the 1920s. He's got, like, a curled mustache.
I know.
This gun amazing. Is gigantic. I mean, whatever. It's ridiculous. And
it's literally a Tommy gun. Yes. Like, it's a guy named Tommy throwing bullets. It's that big.
So as the belt goon reports that Vincent is sick of the games and wants to know where Bobby's stashing his money, Sydney peeks out from behind the gun goon, and apparently she's been behind the bedroom door this whole time, which they didn't check. They don't hear her peek out. It's so funny. You can see the GIF and the visual aids. Bobby refuses to tell them anything. Belt goon is like, time to die, but then Sydney slams the door into gun goon, who shoots wildly all over the room, including apparently hitting belt goon, while Sydney covers Bobby with her body, and then...
Which, by the way,
I mean,
she covers, like, his lower leg, because it's Sydney, and he's a building.
Yes, that's true. Good note. And then clip 4.
You came back.
All the money in the world couldn't keep me away from you.
I didn't want you to have to face the heat. Any heat. Is there any heat?
What?
Is there any heat in this damn place? I'm freezing.
Because it was all a dream. I was so confused by this. This is the cold open of the episode, and I swear to God, I thought I skipped an episode.
Like, I had a feeling it was a dream just because of the waxed mustache dude.
Right.
But then when the dream resolves and there is a building wrapped in a flowered duvet in her bedroom, I was like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about a 3-bedroom lunk in, like, a lady's linens that, I don't know, I just, he's adorable.
It's very cute and very funny. Mm-hmm. And Sydney tries to get Bobby to warm himself up with her in bed, but he reminds her that they're just roommates and she is sad and horny about it. So then Joe gets home after work, stops a little boy from following his ball into the pool, and his mom is right there assuring the kid, whose name is Tyler, that they'll get the ball and assuring Joe that the kid knows how to swim. And introductions are completed. This woman is named Lori. She is played by Jason Bateman, not Bateman, although you can see my mistake because she's played by Jason Priestley's sister, Justine.
Guys.
Another Jason-Justine acting pair. Crazy.
Parents, come on.
Yeah. No. Anyway, she's waiting for Sydney, who did not know they were coming, and Joe invites them up to her place to wait, and they stay 4 hours. Lori's ready to take Tyler to a motel, but Joe says they can take her bed and she'll sleep on the couch, which, like, you just met. This is nice, but it's also weird. Like, it's the whole problem with this plot line, I have to say, is, like, Joe's being a creep.
Well, yeah. And, like, it becomes clear that that's going to be the setup for something else that goes pear-shaped, but it's like, well, that's maybe not totally unjustified.
Yeah.
And then you're torn between being between sort of being not grateful, but like, oh, they actually remembered this aspect of Joe's past plot lines. And then you're like, oh, we're doing this? Well, shit. So good news and bad news.
Lori doesn't have a lot of options, so she agrees. And then we see Joe pick Tyler up off the couch, who fell asleep in his shoes, which is honestly the first sign that Lori's a bad mother. But anyway, Joe brings Lori and Tyler by Sydney's place the next morning, asking to crash with them. Lori asks to crash with Sydney for a little while and pointedly reminds her about Sydney's having done so with Lori a few years back. And Sydney asks about a Tony, and right in front of, presumably, Tony's child, Lori says she left him for good and he probably doesn't even know she's gone. And Tyler interjects to say he's hungry, possibly because Sydney has come to the door with spatula in hand. And Joe tensely says maybe they could discuss this inside. And then Bobby comes to the door, and while Johnny Knows the Third is not really my type, this clingy thermal top, messy hair situation, it really does it for me.
And like the rolled up sleeves, beefy tee, like this is who this is for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like get my man in a ringer with like little flowers on it. Everybody wins. Yes. Love it.
So Joe's eyes bug out at the sight of Bobby, probably not for horny reasons as with me and Sarah. But anyways, Sydney tells Bobby that Lori's just an old friend saying hello and then gets rid of Bobby to blow off Lori while Joe glares judgmentally. And exposits that Sydney's the only person Lori knows in L.A. And not to take Sydney's side, because this is shitty of her if they are friends. But, like, Lori, call first.
Yeah.
Call
and also,
from a,
like,
call from the bus station or airport or wherever.
Yeah. Or, like, there is a three-bedroom in her one-bedroom where what's going to happen? How's that going to work?
It's strictly a matter of physics at this point.
It's an Escher painting as it is. Get a motel.
Well, so Lori says that's what she and Tyler will do, but Joe announces that they'll stay with her for one more night, which is like, okay, the inevitable delayed for 12 more hours. Thanks, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So Lori meets Sydney for lunch at Shooter's, still in last night's clothes, even though we saw that she has luggage. But Lori exposes that Joe got her a job interview and is looking after Tyler. And Sydney unkindly, but maybe accurately, says that Joe has a kid fixation since Joe had to give up her own baby. And Lori wonders if she shouldn't be rubbing her own motherhood in Joe's face in that case. But Sydney advises Lori to use Joe for all the favors she can get, which is nice considering Sydney didn't even do the one favor Lori asked her to do. So then Lori asks about the meatball Sydney's shacking up with. Sydney's starting to wonder if she's losing her touch, given Bobby's lack of interest in her. So Lori pulls down her collar to show Sydney her trick. She and Tony got matching tattoos, and their sex was incredible after that. And Sydney's like, so why did you leave him then? And she realized what she was bonded to. That's why.
It's just endorphins. I will say about this episode that they did, even though like these were obviously either fake tattoos in Laura Layton's case, or just a reason why they wanted to not cover up John Enos's tattoo, or like whatever the reason, like it was obvious that they were practicing post tattoo care, like that they'd slicked it up properly with Neosporin, that I was like, wow, this is where you go with the realism? Okay. I accept.
Well, I mean, tattoos are 90s culture. Like, this is when they were starting to be a thing.
That's true.
Around this time, Rachel got a tattoo on Friends. So it was, you know, it was starting to bubble up, as it were.
Yeah, I think I got my first one in, 1992. I am ancient, but I mean, my mother was like, what are you, in the Merchant Marine?
Right.
Like, it was not, I think she never was like happy about it. But by this point, I guess this is 5 years later, it was much more like a mainstream thing. Also, mine was like a little star on my hip.
I am so cute.
A basic. Hi.
But it's cute. I mean, but like, remember when we watched that behind the scenes at Melrose, or Day in Life of Melrose or whatever, that was like, we followed Josie Bassett to the stylist. And they're like, look, you could put on this temporary tattoo on your back. And it was like, ooh, like so racy. And this is just not very long after that, but it does feel like a change has occurred in the interim.
That is true. That is true.
Moving on. Over Candyland later, Tyler rudely sells out his mother to Joe by saying she doesn't play games with him. And Joe says she works hard to get Tyler the things he needs. And he then shifts into nosy kid questions. Does Joe have kids? She says no. And is she married? And why not? And he says he'll marry her. And she says he would be worth waiting for. And I just want to break in and say, I hate this way of relating to kids. Like, don't say a boy's, he's such a little flirt. Like, it's gross. Don't do it. I hate it.
Yeah. Don't encourage that. Mm-hmm. No. It's not cute.
No. So Joe gets home the next night just in time to hear Lori in the kitchen yelling at Tyler before smacking his hand and shaking him. And when Joe intervenes, Lori says Tyler was playing with the stove, which is something he's really too old to be doing, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, he seems like he's about six. Come on now. Lori, this is
on you. I was
going
to say six or seven. And, you know, my parents were not hitters, but stuff like that, like safety, that's where someone would take a smack. And I actually still don't see a problem with, like, a memorable slap to the hand.
Yes.
With the stove. Like, if we're talking about fire, but, you know, do I have children? No, I don't.
Yeah, don't at us. We don't care. Joe looks disturbed as Lori shakes Tyler some more. I just mean we don't need parenting tips. We literally, no one needs them less than us. Truly.
Yeah. Like, but no one should be giving them less than us was my point. Like, you know. It's like, actually, it's best to make up a song about not playing with the stove. Like, if you say so, that's a YP.
Yeah. Not, do what you feel.
Not an SP.
Oh, who wrote this?
Told y'all.
Anyway, Joe looks disturbed as Lori shakes Tyler some more, and he probably doesn't help his case by slipping away from Lori to hug Joe's legs. And Lori says they'll be out of Joe's hair soon, provided Joe can look after Tyler again while Lori and Sydney look for an apartment the next day. Speaking of Sydney, she's leaving a bar, not Shooters, which is how you can tell she's up to some shenanigans. Bobby exposits that she just bought him seven drinks and he wants to know why she isn't drunk. Like, what? Is she trying to take advantage of him? She says no. He doesn't believe her, but is too drunk to care. I'm sorry. Seven drinks incapacitate this man? He is the jolly Green Giant.
Yeah.
You know what
he is.
Like,
also, even at this point, like, if you were obviously intoxicated, they would not tattoo you. I am positive.
That was my next question, because that's where she steers him to a nearby tattoo parlor and, like, she gets him to walk in. But anyway, the next morning, he wakes up very hungover and shocked to see two tattoos on his enormous arm. And apparently he passed out and they tattooed him anyway, which, as Sarah said, I don't see it.
No, you have to sign things that assert that you were, like, I'm sure there are artists that do it for, like, you know, buzzed people, whatever. Right. Like, I've always had to sign like a stack of waivers about a bunch of things, even when it was technically illegal in the city. And it's like, you're actually buying a cappuccino and then you're going to sort of bump into a needle and it'll make a tomato shape, which is what happened once before it was made legal again. But
sure,
like, there's a lot of, I mean, there's like disease transmission concerns. You have to be over 18. They ask for your ID, and like a all black tat, which is, those are the worst. I have several on a bone. He didn't wake up after a mere seven drinks when this person is zoned light manufacturing. Come on.
Well, furthermore, like, I'm sure they're not trying to get sued.
Yeah.
But in this particular,
they would be.
Right. But in this particular case, they're probably not trying to get murdered later.
Yeah.
When he realizes what happens and goes back there.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby Smash, like, no thanks.
Yeah. But.
And also, how did he get, if he was passed out?
Yeah.
How'd they get him home?
Right.
She just had like a really big wheelbarrow.
She had a handcart. They put him on the tracks.
Which she borrowed it from a wax mustache guy.
That's right.
Exactly. Sure. Fine. No notes. Accepted.
Anyway, back to the scene. He complains that he made it through high school, the Navy, and the CIA. What? Without getting a tattoo. I mean, we knew that he was in the CIA, but I don't see how that's relevant here.
You know, CIA tattoo culture.
Yeah, right. But now, after two nights at Sydney's place, he's scarred for life. But she calls them works of art and shows him the tiny arrow-pierced heart that she got on her boob. Where else? And he is pissed that hers is so much smaller, but she thinks the point is that they shared the pain by experiencing the same thing and bonding. And based on the way he stalks out silently and slams the door, he does not agree.
Mm.
And that
also,
night,
how could you bond if he was passed out? But, you know.
Yeah. Also, hers would have taken like 16 seconds and his would have taken all night.
Yeah, it's true. His, they would still be working on it. That is really a lot of ink.
His too. Anyway. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that night, Joe has to jolly Tyler into a bath. He claims water scares him, even though the first thing we saw him do was try to go into the pool after his ball, like 40 minutes ago. But she guesses he'll be less scared if there are bubbles. And when he gets undressed, she sees a gigantic bruise on his shoulder. And he doesn't know how he got it and runs away to get a toy. And Joe has a lot to think about.
Oh, good. We're doing an issues plot involving a child.
Yeah. And again, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, a person bathing a child who is not related to them. Duh. Like, you know, an aunt and a nephew or what have you. But again, Joe met this child yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like he's too old for her to do this.
Well, and if he doesn't want to take a bath, like, I don't know. This aunt's next move is like, then you can explain it to your parents. I'm going to shut this door. What happens next is up to you.
Right.
And that's why I'm the worst aunt in the world. I'm like, I'm going to the track. Bathe or get in the car.
Close it up with our A plot. The situation at D&D gets worse while Peter and Michael take their double act on the road. Peter lets himself into Amanda's apartment, surprising us all by letting us know he still has a key. He's carrying a bag of groceries. He cheerfully goes into the bathroom looking for her and finds her in the shower, soaping up Billy's back.
Billy.
Yeah, he's as horrified as we all are, I feel, and audibly hits the bathroom door on his way out. And when she hears it, Amanda goes out looking to see who's there. Clip 5.
What in God's name?
I don't believe this. I came by to wish you a happy birthday. I didn't mean to interrupt your water play.
Are you crazy? You can't sneak into my apartment like this.
Sorry. I should have realized you'd already be on your next boy toy. Here's your key. Don't forget to call first. Oh. He's a smug piece of work, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's complicated. Why don't you finish taking a shower?
Don't I owe you a little soap jab?
Oh, no! You two are disgusting! Disgusting!
No! the only thing that saved me from vomiting myself inside out and dying is how bad Andrew Hsu is at acting.
Like, yeah,
the line delivery of that was customarily off and is the only that it saved my life. Thank you, Andrew Hsu.
Look, no one's here saying he doesn't have a good body. He does.
No.
I'm not mad to see it. I'm mad at that head at the top of it saying words.
I don't need the phrase soap job to exist.
No.
Much less to be uttered by It's Billy.
At Amanda, who she does not deserve this. She just doesn't.
No, she doesn't. There's got to be a better way, but whatever. We will.
Well, we'll get to it. So after Amanda sent Billy back to the bathroom and out of her sight, I might be projecting slightly, she regards the continental breakfast that Peter prepared and reads the card, which says, "Dear Amanda, come hell or high water, I love you." His script, real
love,
girly.
Joan.
Yeah. You can see it in the visual
Phyllis
aids.
Wrote that shit. Yeah. Yes,
totally. Also on the tray is, I think it's a diamond tennis bracelet, but the fixtures are like, it's so gold, it's actually hard to tell.
And it's like the episode director knew how just like 50 cent claw machine that jewelry always is on this show. This is no exception. And it's lit so badly that you can't tell if it's a diamond tennis bracelet or if it's just that like Zales 70% off.
Gold link something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, oh, yeah. Brutal.
Yeah, it's ugly. Obviously, it's in the visual aids. She lays it on her wrist, but can't bring herself to clasp it. I wouldn't either. And has feelings about it.
That feeling is, this will turn my arm green, but yes. That
feeling is, I wonder if it would be tacky to ask for a gift receipt. The next place we see Peter is on a beach, secretly meeting up with Kimberly. Her relationship with Michael is of ultimate importance, but her mood swings are making her feel closed in. And she doesn't want Michael to think that she is pushing him away, but could Peter get Michael out of town? And Peter maturely says that if she and Michael are going to stay together, they'll have to talk about things. But Kimberly ignores that and begs him. And as luck would have it, something's coming up that might interest Michael. And in the meantime, Kimberly needs to take her medication, and she promises she will. And I don't know how much shit Allison had in her office, but she's continuing to pack it up when Amanda comes by and tells her she doesn't have to quit. Like, she's really more than one box? Weird.
Didn't she just move back in there after Brooke left?
Yes, she did. Anyway. I forgot to notice if they repainted her name on the door, because if they did, Amanda should take that out of her severance or whatever.
Seriously.
Allison stands firm, so Amanda downshifts to irritated, telling Allison to grow up and quit judging everyone. And Allison turns Amanda's career advice back on her, saying what a sellout she is. Clip six.
Listen to me. I do what I have to survive in a world run by underqualified Ivy League male runts. So you go on home and lick your little wounds. I'll stay here and get things done.
Well, from what I hear, those runts are going to kick your butt out and put in your bedmate, Billy. I left you some boxes. You might need them.
You always were an amateur, Allison.
And I'll stay that way. Just as long as being a pro is the same as standing on Sunset Boulevard flagging down tricks.
All right.
Okay. Look.
Sex work is work. Let's not be rude.
Yes, it is.
No, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're agreed.
Yeah, no, that was my like primary issue with that. It was like, hey,
don't
justice
compare
for
people.
Sex workers. Come on.
Yes. Don't negatively compare people doing sex work to people working in advertising, because like, come on.
Yeah.
Neither is really much, much more respectable than the other by any metric. On her way out, Allison runs into Billy. Clip seven.
I hope you're all right, Billy.
Hey, I'm not the one walking out on the job. Don't worry about me.
Well, I do. I'll see you.
I'm fine, Allison, okay? I'm the one that's in the action, making things happen. You're nowhere. You're ridiculous. I'm fine.
Yeah, you're great.
We get it. Please stop.
Please. Please.
Please stop.
So then Peter calls Michael into his office and invites him to a beauty pageant in San Diego, in the process of which they will bond and end up better business partners. What is this fucking Three Stooges-ass setup plotline?
And also, it would be so much better if they were, like, doing trust falls at some men's retreat, but...
Yes.
What do I know? I just work here.
Mm-hmm. Michael's glad Peter's over Amanda and back to being a hound, but Michael doesn't need the temptation of other babes, but as senior partner, Peter insists, and Michael relents. And elsewhere, Allison's regaling Jake with her tale of ditching her job, and he offers to find a shift or two for her at Shooters, because it is, as we know, Los Angeles' foremost employment agency at this point. That night, Amanda comes to see Peter as he's leaving the office and tells him she can't accept his gift. It's too ugly. Just kidding. She thought she was clear that they weren't involved anymore, and he does not take it well, saying that they are involved and she'll figure that out eventually. And they argue about whether he lies to her. And then he states that she loves him. And when she denies it, he kisses her and she kisses back and then takes off as fast as possible when he's like, see, but he's right. She loves him.
Hmm.
And then we're at the Miss Health and Fitness pageant. And though they say it's San Diego, I was very sure it was the same hotel from the season 5 Palm Springs sorority slash fraternity retreat on 90210.
It absolutely is. The pool is very distinctive.
Well, I have a usual website that I go and check that has all like the actual locations, and it neither confirmed nor denied. It said that this, it said where this was in Oxnard, but it didn't say that it was the same one as Palm Springs. So I looked up that episode and did a side by side. Even though they didn't do the same angles, it is. You're welcome.
For sure.
So Michael and Peter are loitering by the pool when Chuck Woolery rolls by to thank them for being there. He's the host of the beauty pageant, because of course he is.
Yep, season 4.
Yep. But this doesn't stop Michael's whining about what a stupid idea this is. He doesn't get why Kimberly even let him go and takes off to call her. And Peter can't stop him because then he's being approached by Terry Carson, Lonnie Anderson, who wanted to introduce her daughter, Brandy, Denise Richards. She was Miss Tarzana, we are told.
Sure was, when she wasn't at Jackie and Mel's wedding.
That's right. Terry figures Peter's knowledge of anatomy must really serve him when he's judging a contest like this. Oh, and brother. Peter tries to excuse himself because he can tell it's not going anywhere good. But Terry holds him there by the arm. Bit of a twist up on the old arm grab before ordering him to get her a drink and ordering Brandy to go do herself some good with Michael. Speaking of whom, Kimberly is just sitting in a rocking chair in the middle of the living room. Like, she's not reading a book. She's not watching TV. She's just sitting there, like, staring into space when Michael calls.
Yeah.
Very strange.
And it looks super uncomfortable, and that floor is ugly. Like, you have a porch. You didn't have to build another set. Just go out there. Does it still smell like couch fire outside? What's the problem?
Yes, if you're going to stare into space, stare at the ocean. It's right behind you.
That's what it's for.
Really. Because anyway, Michael offers to let a backup judge fill in for him so he can come home, but Kimberly really needs to be alone. Like, I don't get what she's trying to do. It's not like she's just taking downtime to get through a cold, although that's what it seems like she's doing in the next episode.
Yeah.
But anyway, after Michael's hung up, Brandy bumps into him to make him drop his cell phone so they can have a flirty meet cute while she asks to borrow it. She's so nervous. She's never made a statewide contest before. She doesn't stand a chance to win. Or does she? Michael thinks she'll do fine. She pretends not to know he's one of the judges and then offers to pay for the phone call by making out with him. Gets pretty close. And on the other side of the pool, Terry is suggesting that she and Peter get to know each other better over dinner. He thinks it wouldn't be permitted, but she claims it's fine. And he tries to get out of it by mentioning Michael, but she's sure he wouldn't mind Peter getting to learn about Brandy as a person so that Peter has her in mind at voting time. And he finally agrees for some reason. And then Amanda's having lunch with Billy at Shooters, bitching that her contract still hasn't been renewed when they see Allison working a shift, and then it's a round of snits for everyone. Clip 8.
Making an honest living. What a concept.
Oh, you do know your liquor.
That was a classy comment, Billy. So, this is the rising star you're hitching yourself to? This is none of your business. Thank God for that.
Yeah, you're better off. Truly.
Yeah, you really are.
So then Amanda resumes complain expositing about her currently precarious work situation while Billy looks at her with a very dumb expression, per usual. She thinks they might be grooming a new president. The members of the board don't know her because she can't socialize with them, which, like, she can't. I guess she means because Arthur belongs to that men's club or whatever. It's whatever.
This was another feature of mid-90s culture, is Cosmo telling women to learn to play golf so that they would have access to the boys' club that way. Like,
sure.
I don't know.
Not worth it, in my opinion.
It really isn't.
Billy suggests that she take the members of the board out for dinner, but Amanda says it can't be a guy's night, like when Billy hangs out with them. So he recommends a picnic, or a party, like for her birthday, and he'll invite the whole board, but he assumes she'll want her friends there too. And she intones that she doesn't have friends, just enemies and associates. And he wants to know which he is, and she says, that's up to him. Da da da. That night, Peter and Terry are leaving dinner when they run into Michael in the hall. Terry, by the way, is in a bandage dress that's like so tight. It's so tight. It looks dangerously tight.
It really does. She looks, I mean, she looks good, but it just looks like, you know, that planet in A Wrinkle in Time that's only two dimensions. So the heart had to be sideways. Mm-hmm. I think of that every time I'm wearing something that's too tight and anytime she is. And oof.
So Michael is still dying to go home, but Peter suggests they all have a drink instead. But Michael decides to go for a walk on the beach. And in the elevator, Terry asks Peter back to her room. When he politely declines, she stops the elevator and kisses on him. And he's flattered, but he's in love with another woman. She's not about love, though. And hitting the button bought her an hour before help will arrive. And Peter more insistently pushes her away. And she gets mad and says rich doctors think they control the world, but all she's ever had is her looks. She almost won a title at Brandy's age, but no one ever helped her. And she's Brandy's ticket to the top. And if Peter's just in this for dinner, he still needs to know that she still thinks she's bought his vote and gets out of the elevator. And Peter looks like he knows he fucked it. And on the beach, Terry appears outside her room on the fourth floor, as was just exposited in the elevator. Like, her eye line looks like she's looking directly at them.
Right.
Just saying. She watches as Brandy sits down with Michael. She's still trying to repay him for the cell phone call, and he's still trying to resist until she bodily throws him onto the sand and straddles him. And the way the show tries to set up what happens next is not great. Clip 9.
Hey, look.
No, you look. This is not your responsibility. You weren't asking for it. You didn't do it. I did. And I like doing it. See, you just lie there and do nothing. Then you can honestly say, I didn't do anything.
I don't even want to be here.
You aren't here. You're a figment of my imagination. I'm a figment of yours. And when we wake up, you're gonna vote for me. Vote for me. For me.
Yeah, no.
Well,
nope.
No, here's the thing. I feel like that speech was specifically written to be like, she, consent is not a factor because she is saying in so many words, this is my choice. But
right.
Even if you accept that, which, like, we're about to find out she's only 17. So, like, no.
Yeah, that's off the table.
But even if you do, which you can't, but if you do, then it still means she's sexually assaulting him. Like, this is not okay either way. It's very bad.
None of this is okay. So, yeah.
No. Ugh. And even less okay is the very proud smile that Terry flashes as she looks upon this happening, which is, like, awful and yet quite effective, I thought.
Yeah, it was effective. I mean, this is like a, I know it's a soap and no one's, like, really looking to this for, like, you know, SVU-esque activist realism about false reporting, but, like, the whole thing is played like waka waka haha, which like, it's all completely wrong. So yeah. Oof. And it's gonna drag on for a while. Spoiler.
So the next morning, Michael's back at the scene of the literal crime with a guy using a metal detector to try and find his wedding ring when Kimberly calls. She misses him. Wanting space wasn't about him. She's just going through changes, and he promises he'll be back soon, and then hangs up and tries to metal detect the ring himself. And then it's judging time. Michael wearily tells Peter he better have voted for Brandy, and Peter's like, what do you care? And they briefly argue about it before Chuck Woolery announces the standings. Brandy is first runner-up. She does not handle it graciously, and Terry's not thrilled either and barks at Peter that Brandy needed this title and now she'll never be Miss California. And Michael is, of course, confused, but Peter says they're just sore losers while Brandy continues to try to kill Peter with her eyes. Mm-hmm. And back in L.A. that night, Billy tries to get something going with Amanda sex-wise, but she's not in the mood. And when he sees she's crying, she says it's not about him. She doesn't want to burden him with her career problems. And he offers to talk to the board himself about her contract renewal if he has to. She tries to get him to promise not to do anything for her, but he won't agree, and she lets it go. Wink. And the next morning, I thought Kimberly looked very cute in overalls. This is a look I'm jealous of because I can't pull it off, but she did, I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're just too, our porches are too deep for that look. It's fine. It is what it is.
It is the issue.
It's right. It's a lot easier for us to pee some days than it is for an overall wearer. And, you know, just trying to bright side this. Just to go back for a second, though, I want to add that, like, I like that this ends up being a little like heel turn for Amanda, who like goes to the couch to quote cry and then smarms to herself smugly. But like the whole thing rests on the idea that after like two bones, that if she like he's staying over at night at all. Right. But then if she's not in the mood and is crying and is like, I don't want to bother you, then at that point you are like, well, I will go back to my apartment in the same complex. Like you're not visiting from out of town. Just get out of her way.
Yeah.
I don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm like a guy like that, but I'd just be like, sniff, get out. Like, I don't know. Also, it's Billy, though, so maybe that's affecting
right
my feelings. Also, the phrase soap job, which I never forget.
That's why I had to include it. People had to know. If we just said it, they'd be like, well, there's no way he said soap job. No, he did. Mm-hmm. He did.
He did.
Anyway, back to Michael's return. Kimberly missed Michael so much, and he immediately confesses about the lost ring, but claims he lost it body surfing. And says they'll just go get him another one today. They can both get new ones. But Kimberly starts babbling about what a bad omen it is for their marriage. He insists they're forever. Cut to Amanda's birthday party where she blows out candles surrounded by a bunch of D&D phonies. It's the fifth birthday she's celebrated since she's been to the agency. And though she won't say what she wished for, she wouldn't mind five more years. And Arthur Field, the jerk boss that we met in the last episode, asks for a word. And gives her her new contract. It's not 5 years, it's three. She is happy. But Arthur immediately tells her it only happened because Billy threatened to quit if they didn't re-sign her, and she pledges to give credit where it's due. Clip 10.
So, good news?
I got my wish, a new contract, because of you, I'm told.
Well, just consider it a birthday present, which you can thank me for later at your place.
Well, actually, I was looking forward to going to Peter's tonight.
You're joking, right?
No.
I just put my butt on the line for you, Amanda.
And that was totally your choice. Look at it this way. I got what I wanted, and for a couple of weeks, you got what you wanted.
I know. You were using me.
Well, that's a polite term for it.
It's not that polite.
No.
Anyway.
I mean, it's actually accurate. Like, that's not a euphemism. That's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, as you say, I'm glad that this was all an op because the thought that she was falling back in love with him was disgusting.
Yeah, it's true.
So Peter has just plated a sandwich when the doorbell rings, and I guess his San Diego ordeal was so taxing that he has to take half of it with him to the door, and I
love that we both clipped this for the visual aids, and we both basically titled it, like, what is it that you called it? Like, we stand
a snacky king, I believe.
And I was just like, take the gun, leave the sandwich, or I forget what I put, and then I didn't have to because you had already done it, but it was like, he brought, and then he, well, we'll get to it.
Yes.
He keeps the sandwich throughout the scene. My hero.
It looks like a good sandwich. I wouldn't drop it either.
Me neither.
I don't care what's happening. That sandwich is coming with me.
Mm-hmm. And if Amanda really loves him, she'll understand. But anyway.
That's right. So, as you say, it's Amanda at the door. She would have called first, but she didn't want to risk Peter's refusing to see her. And when he asks after her sidekick, Billy, she says she's done with him. And Peter, he kicks the door closed behind him. And that felt to me like Jack Wagner business more so than anything that was in the script.
Absolutely,
and I loved
agree.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Being with Billy made her miss Peter in a way she can't really explain. And he gets loud to say he can't really keep up with her. And since no one in or out of the scene believes that Peter's not going to take Amanda back, they're already about to kiss when the doorbell rings again. Ring, ring, bad timing here. Clip 11.
Yes. You bastard. You had sex with my daughter.
Not let go of me. How did you find out where I live?
What's going on? Your friend here seduced a 17-year-old girl, a virgin, and he's not going to get away with it.
You need to have your head examined, lady.
My lawyers are filing suit in the morning, charging you with unlawful sexual intercourse, corruption of a minor.
You're suing me because I didn't vote for your daughter in that stupid beauty pageant. This is absurd.
If I were you, Dr. Burns, I'd start coming up with a more credible defense. See you in court.
You're nuts, lady, you hear me? You're nuts!
You slept with a 17-year-old?
No! You can see the woman's a psychopath. Amanda, Michael and I were judges at a beauty contest.
I am such an idiot.
Amanda! You're not gonna believe this woman, are you? I love you. Why would I want to be with anyone else? The whole time I was at this beauty pageant, all I could think of was you.
I can't believe that in a moment of weakness, I almost let myself get sucked back into your sick, twisted world.
Amanda, wait. Amanda!
No!
No, it was so good. And that they didn't have him just glumly eating the sandwich. I mean, everything else about this, everything about this plot line is horrible. And like everything we mentioned before, plus now, like they're just suing him, like call the cops then.
Right.
Fancy. No. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're going to play it for laughs, which Jack Wagner is apparently determined to do, despite how wretched all of this is, because he has been on soaps basically his entire adult life. And he's like, this is the job.
Yeah.
Like, just have him be like, munch. She's driving away. Like, that. I was like, but the sandwich.
Yeah, there definitely are comedic elements, not just his no, but when he's like, look, Michael and I were judges in a beauty contest. Like, he knows how dumb this plot is.
Yeah.
No. And he's not selling it out exactly, but it's like clear that this is a bad place to start from because she, you know, even if she were paying attention to him, her next sentence would be like, what the fuck? Because what the fuck? Why were you even invited to do this?
Yeah. And I mean, of course, you know, tried to kill her, mm-hmm. fucked Alicia, like bygones. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
I mean,
maybe it's just recency bias, but Jack Wagner.
The sandwich. The sandwich. Sandwich did nothing. The sandwich, there was enthusiastic consent surrounding the sandwich.
That's right.
The sandwich.
Yeah.
Honorable mention to Allison.
Least valuable player.
Lonnie Anderson. What's her character's name again? Phyllis?
Terry.
Oh, Terry. Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, Terry's like, a creep. That's a good call.
A Moebius rape scheme. Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, obviously, it's the writers who thought it up, but hey, Terry.
Yeah. Since you named her, I will say Doug Savant, because this character is not getting serviced, and I don't mean sexually, but that either. Mm,
yeah, you need to check, please, that with a quickness. Check, please. Next time on Again With This, Joe protects a child, Peter gets sued by one, Sid blunders into adult entertainment, and Billy finally grows up. You'll feel like you aged 10 years after looking at our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And you could join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you tons of extra episodes. I'm TV tattoo cop Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Honest Living Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is voter fraud David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?